Welcome back to Creative Disturbance. I'm Ivan Tina. I have the pleasure today to be with Greg at the, what is the name again?
Zebra Imaging.
So you're making hologram and holograph. What is the difference, distinction between the two?
Well, hologram is the usual term, and holograph is not the typical term. That has an earlier meaning. That means a handwritten document. So all these are holograms, and then you refer to holography as the overall term.
What is the story of that, of this technology?
Well, it started out at MIT. A group of students at MIT got together and created a company in about 1997, and they moved to Austin and set up a company. And they basically got a job from Ford Motor Company to create a full-size image of a car, a full-size hologram of a car for an auto show. And so they essentially bootstrapped the company based on that one job. So they said, Ford said, can you do this? And they said, yes, we can do this. And then they did it. And and that's how Zebra got started. Uh-huh. But they had the initial concepts were developed, I think, at MIT, at the Media Lab.
From what I've seen, it has to do with medical care, with geolocalization.
Yes.
And what are the other possible?
GIS applications are good, are big. Pre-visualization for design,
mm-hmm.
And technology of all kinds. What we refer to as AEC market, architectural, engineering, and construction.
Mm-hmm.
We're even venturing into consumer applications, so you can capture an image of your family or your pet, and just like all the cat videos, we can make cat holograms. We do have affordable versions for small holograms. 8x10 holograms are in the neighborhood of $100 to $200 for a 8x10 hologram with the lighting kit and so on. All the prices are on our website.
Oh, okay.
But it goes from that, the lower end, to the higher end. It gets into thousands, certainly thousands of dollars when you get into something like we're standing next to a 6-foot tall,
yes,
hologram of a human, a visible human. And that I don't know exactly what the price would be for that, but it's certainly into thousands of dollars to do that. But it's getting more affordable, and it's getting more, and certainly it's very cost effective when you compare it to equivalent sized solutions. For example, if you wanted to create a full-size human,
mm-hmm,
with rapid prototyping, 3D printing,
yeah,
you can imagine how long it would take to produce a model of that complexity with the color, with the surface effects, you know, like reflectivity and different effects like that. You just cannot achieve with 3D printing at this
point. Do scientists using this kind of technology have a better insight?
Really penetrated much into scientific imaging, although I have a personal.
I guess that physicians are using this.
This is intended, I think, for teaching, as opposed to diagnostics.
Okay.
Although there are applications in diagnostics, I think the price and the turnaround time we have right now is not doesn't work well for that market. But I think for teaching,
the main usability, utilities, education?
We believe so. And in that it's, there are some really fine computer models of the human body. One is by a company we work with called Zygote. And they make, they have a data set which we've used for a number of these images, which is a very highly accurate and well documented. So all the elements in the model are named, and so a student can actually learn a lot from interacting with that model set.
Yesterday we were talking about the use of holograms in theater, mm-hmm, and you was telling about this opera in Munich,
yes,
and the issue for which you've been, you know, going on. So
that it was a well-known theater producer for the Munich Opera,
yeah,
and they wanted to produce a version of the Tales of Hoffmann,
mm-hmm,
and there's a character in that opera. Is Olympia, who is an automaton, is a character that kind of like Pinocchio. And so in this case, they wanted to apply holography to the appearance of that character, the creation of that character in the opera. And so they came to a previous company I was with called Advanced Dimensional Displays, mm-hmm. and they commissioned us to make these holograms. The issue was theirs that they sent us a model which was not great for making a hologram. Basically, they sent us a full-size, full-height human figure, which was an articulated mannequin made of plastic.
Yes.
And it was wearing a very frilly, ornate dress, and with lots of netting and pearls and quite elaborate. And so it was very difficult to make a hologram of this object because of its unstable nature. When you make holograms of real objects, you either have to use very short exposures mm-hmm. using a pulse laser, mm-hmm. or you have to have very stable materials to use longer exposures, like in a matter of seconds. And so when we tried to do this, we weren't successful in making a hologram of this object this way. So considering that it was theater, and that what I felt mattered was the illusion, the impression that the theater attendees would see, we then tried a solution where I took two-dimensional pictures of the character in various poses, and then made a hologram of one of those, so that a two-dimensional version of the character stood at a distance from the holographic film, so it was behind the panel, the holographic panel. And what was interesting is we presented it to the customer at that time, the theater director and his consultant. And I told them it wasn't a hologram of their object. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a hologram of the thing they wanted. And I said, this is not what you asked for.
Yes.
And so they were very concerned about that. But then I revealed it to them at the various distances in a warehouse, basically. We put them up into the balcony with a genie lift. We set them at various distances, laid out according to the design of the Munich Opera House. And they loved it. Mm-hmm. They were raving about how wonderful it looked. The effect was perfect. Everything was great.
They get disappointed at some point.
Well, I took them right up to the hologram until their nose was nearly on the surface of the hologram. And then after maybe 15 minutes, I was able to get across to them to what they were actually seeing was a flat image that was behind the hologram image, behind the film. And then they got upset. Partly because they felt they had been fooled, yet I had told them ahead of time that they were going to be fooled. The problem was they had a preconceived idea about what the hologram would be. The problem was they had a agreement with mm-hmm. another organization where this hologram was going to be shown in a museum after the production. And therefore, that hologram had to be a real hologram of the real thing. Uh-huh. And so now it didn't matter about the theatrical effect, right? The thing that I felt was important was what the public, what the people in the theater mm-hmm. experienced.
Yeah.
It was more about what the final application that would happen well after the theater event was done. So anyway, that's in the case of holograms in theater, you can do things which are illusions.
Yeah.
Which work very well in theater.
Yes.
And a famous recent one is the Tupac Shakur at Coachella, the big event where everybody referred to that as a hologram. Mm-hmm. And of course it wasn't. It was a very old idea brought up to date with video called Pepper's Ghost.
Yeah.
And so in that case, everyone was quite pleased with the result and said, oh, there's holographic Tupac and everything's great. He's standing next to the other a live person, and they're having they're doing a rap together, and it's wonderful.
Yeah.
And it did the job for the theatrical application. Those methods still work for theater. In holography, what I like to think is that holography is best when it's within arm's reach. And you've experienced it yourself when you've seen some of our holograms,
yeah.
and you, you put your hands through the
image. The interactivity.
Yes, it's the interactivity, and with multiple people, it's the collaboration. It's the ability to understand the image in a way that is just, there's just no other way to do it, especially when you're talking about, say, computer models of a product or of a skeleton, or you know, the nervous system or something, where everyone is getting a real three-dimensional experience, and they're everybody seeing it together.
The interesting thing for me, you know, this move from theater to museum, I'm very interested in that evolution. But much more interesting to me is this question of illusion and identification to what is supposed to be realistic. Can it be used to something different than to render illusion or identification, or, you know, to create a less realistic environment?
Well, there's lots of application using other methods that utilize holography that aren't necessarily reproducing a surrogate for a character, say.
Yes.
That they could be something which create an effect, which has some, which is not necessarily producing, like I say, a surrogate or a character. That it could be just simply something magical, to add an effect. Yeah, like lighting effects.
Yes.
Yeah. And so those are still possibilities, and can be done in scale that make a difference. Doing things in scale in holography has been a problem because it requires materials that are in fixed widths, and so it's harder to make things like the Tupac kind of effect, you know, or having Michael Jackson come out on stage. Those things are more difficult in using true holography.
It seems to me that it fits best so far, even if it can be used, you know, to render. But it seems to me that it fits much better with the museum space.
I believe so. I think because that it is a personal experience. It's something where you're not just seeing something at a distance. I mean, your perception of 3D really works within about, say, 5 to 10 meters of yourself, of your body. And so the closer that gets to you, to within arm's reach, that's where the holography really shines. And certainly when we've talked about, like, when people look at our holograms and say, well, when can I have holographic television? Then whatever means you use to get that effect of what we think holographic television is or will be, then we can bring things into a space where it's within arm's reach, where or say on a television-like experience, where it's not just a flat screen anymore, but it's the proscenium of the theater, right? And now you see things laid out in depth. They don't necessarily poke you in the eyes, right? They don't necessarily jump into your lap, but it's a state of realism that you could achieve, that we hope to achieve in the future, certainly. And we have a lot of expectation about that, and we see that expectation in film.
How will the Oculus Rift modify your holography?
Well, there's a place for all of these technologies. I think the idea of the Oculus Rift, which is not an augmented reality but a virtual reality in the general terms of it. I think the terms for augmented reality is what a better term would be, integrated reality, where you're bringing something into your room, into your space, right? So now you could have theater happen on your kitchen table, right? Yes. You could have the play take place on your coffee table in that case. So I think there's going to be some pretty interesting things happen with those types of application. The nice thing about holography, I think, is that it's...
Excuse me, there's enough room for both of them?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, I believe so. I think, ultimately, when you're doing design work with, say, augmented reality, you may still want to push a button and make a hologram to send it to a customer, for example, because the hologram doesn't require any wiring. It just requires, like, a simple light or a flashlight for the technology to play, whereas all these other methods require, you know, active computation and head tracking, or, you know, positional tracking of all the viewers, and electricity in general.
Thank you very much, Craig, for the discussion, and we hope to have you soon.
Okay, let's take a quick look at the other discussion. Thank you.